Tilehurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetilehurstend.com.
Hello and welcome to the Tilehurst End Podcast, extra in association with Get Reading for Friday, March the 4th, 2016. My name is Dan Wimbush, editor of thetilehurstend.com. Thanks very much once again for hitting that download button. And I'm delighted to be joined, as always, on the podcast extra by Get Reading's Reading reporter, Charles Watts. Charles, hello.
Dan, how's it going, mate?
Yeah, not so bad, thank you. The weather's turning. Spring is here.
I know, sunshine. Looking out the window right now. Nice and sunny. Although it's snowy everywhere else in the country.
So yeah.
We're getting away with it.
Yeah, and I feel almost bad. I'm going to strut out of here in shorts and a t-shirt.
Yeah, you're mad if you do that.
I don't know. Probably not. Probably not. That's something more to do on a Saturday at football games, judging by away fans.
Or yeah, even... I saw some pictures from the away end of the valley that made me laugh on the weekend.
Yeah, in fact, they're saying that there's a couple of people who sit fairly near me in Y25, Y26 who brave it in shorts every week. So it's not just limited to our travelling visitors. Speaking of the Valley, let's dive into it then. Reading win 4-3 at Charlton. Don't think many of us saw a seven-goal thriller coming out of that 1-0 win over Rotherham. Was it? Did Reading get out of jail with that last-minute Rackles goal, or did they deserve all 3 points?
I think they got out. Well, no, I think they deserved 3 points, but they certainly got out of jail because they did their best to throw it away in that second half, didn't they? But yeah, thrilling game. I loved it. I've sat through so many drab 0-0 draws between this season and last season. So to get a game like that, it was great entertainment. And fortunately for Reading, they came out the right side of the result. It was a great game. I mean, first half for Reading, brilliant. The quality of the goals, all four goals, to be fair, I thought were really, really good from Reading. And yeah, it was a pleasure to watch. And thankfully, we went home happy because of Dennis's late strike. So no, decent game. I'm not sure Brian would want to sit through 90 minutes like that every single week, though.
What went wrong? We'll talk about the attacking brilliance in a minute, but what went wrong defensively? Because this was a team who had kept 3 consecutive championship clean sheets and only conceded 1 goal in 4 in all competitions. What happened to suddenly concede a hat-trick to a fellow you might be slightly familiar with, Yaya Sanogo?
I refuse to accept it as a hat-trick. It was not a hat-trick. I don't know how he's got away with claiming a hat-trick. His second goal wasn't his goal. It was an own goal by Cooper.
Well, they're saying it crossed the line. They're trying to claim it crossed the line.
But there's no touchline technology or anything like that. All it is a referee's decision, and the referee in the line I didn't give the goal. The only flag went up after the board rebounded back. I was dead in line of it, and I thought it looked over line, but the lino and the referee did not give the goal. The lino only put his flag up when the ball rebounded back in after Cooper. So I don't know how Sanogo's managed to walk away claiming a hat trick from that, because it was definitely not his goal. But anyway, that's another thing. To be fair to Charlton, I thought they attacked really well, and Sanogo was a right handful the whole way through the game. We've seen him at Arsenal before. He's been a handful at times, but he just can't ever finish. But obviously he found his shooting boots at the weekend. But I don't know if Reading maybe came out a little bit, thought it was all too easy and came out with the wrong attitude at the start of the second half. And obviously the goal very early on after half time gave Charlton something to go for, and you know, fair play to them, they went for it, and they caused Reading all sorts of problems. And the sort of formation that Reading have played with Michael Hector sitting in front of the back four has obviously tightened things up in recent weeks, but that didn't seem to have the same effect against Charlton. And there was a few sort of individual errors. I mean, Ola John gave away the ball for the first goal, and you know, Cooper will probably be disappointed at the way Sanogo sort of skipped round him before his finish. So there was just some individual errors, and it was just that sort of game. I think sometimes you just have to accept it can't always be a tight sort of disciplined defensive performance. Every so often you get just a mad, crazy football match like that one, that it's hard to fathom and put your finger on exactly what went wrong and what went right. It was just a mad game.
On the plus side though, Jan Kermigan grabbing 2 goals, could have really got a third. I think is the one that was disallowed from nearly the halfway line was the most spectacular of the lot. We're finally seeing now quite what Bournemouth fans loved about him.
Yeah, it was quality performance just all round. I mean, not just the goals. His pass for Ola John's goal as well was absolutely superb. And that's what he's about, because he's not just a goal scorer. He's a number 10 almost. He's great technique, real good football brain. And I thought that was a brilliant ball for John's goal. And, you know, his 2 finishes, the header is just bread and butter for him at the back post. But the second goal was quality, wasn't it? The touch inside his man and curled in his finish. And I have no idea why that 40-yarder was ruled out. I think it was the referee hand thought it was handball.
Yeah,
but it was very harsh. He was right in front of him. That happens in the penalty area. You can guarantee the referee wouldn't give a penalty for that. So I thought that was pretty harsh. But yeah, great performance from Yam and Ola John as well, who was electric during the first half going forward. I thought he caused Charlton all sorts of problems down that side. And great assist for Kermigan's goal. Lovely finish himself for his goal. So, yeah, that was Reading at their best in that first half. I thought going forward, it was been a while since we've seen them attack like that and look so dangerous. So, fingers crossed, that's what we're going to get for the rest of the season now.
Ola John really winning the fans over. He's quickly becoming a bit of a Kebe figure.
Yeah.
And with performances like that, you can absolutely see why. You know, he's a player that went for around 8 million odd euros not so long ago. He's still only 23 as well, so hopefully he's only going to get better. But what chances do you think that he'll get that opportunity at the Modesky Stadium? Do you think he'll be here next season?
Honestly, no. I don't think we're going to be able to afford him. I don't know what Benfica would want for him. He's only got a year left in his contract. But, you know, even if it's just 2 or 3 million, I mean, how many times have Reading ever paid that money for a player? I mean, they've never spent more than 2.5 million. And would they? You've got to think what Brian's going to get given in the summer is probably going to be around 3 million quid or something like that. And is he going to splash that all on one player? I'd be very surprised. I hope I'm wrong, because I think like you said, it is age. I think he's a quality player. He's only going to get better. We've seen what Brian did with Jimmy Kebe, and he seems to be getting the best out of John now. And you know, Brian says he loves him. He thinks he's an amazing player, but I'd be surprised. I mean, could you see Redden spending, even if it's just 3 million, on John?
I think that question might come be answered by a point we'll come up to in a minute about outside investment.
Yeah.
But if things stay as they are, no, especially with the parachute payments dropping again. We just analysed the most recent accounts and they're not bad, but they're far from brilliant. And when you consider things like Royal Elm Park and the training ground and stuff going on, it's really... And it's not just the signing fee as well, Charles. It's the contract.
Yeah, and given... you look in those accounts that I was reading the bit on your website about the wage bill and stuff, and the way you compare that wage bill to even someone like Leeds at the moment, who I saw, and it's massively more than that, more than a lot of clubs in the Championship. And you know, signing someone like Ola John is not going to help bringing that wage bill down, which they're going to have to do because of the parachute payments. So yeah, it's a long shot for me.
And just that as well, it's not just the fact that you have to pay those wages on an individual season. This will be a sort of a minimum of a 3-year contract, you'd imagine. And paying those sort of wages, we saw what they did when you handed out contracts like that to Royston Genta, to Pogrebniak, to Danny Williams. Mm. And you really wouldn't want to get Reading into that situation again. So like you, I'd absolutely love to see him sign. But I think that might well come down to this man who I'm going to go for the pronunciation game. If you listen to the main show, you'll hear my... attempt at the first time round. We're going to go again. Dmitry Robilev is what
I'm going with that as well. I think he's done well there.
Why is his name, for those who haven't heard this story, why is his name relevant for Reading right now?
Well, he's been linked over in France by L'Equipe, very respected French newspaper over in France, last weekend, on Sunday I believe it was, saying that he was very close to buying a 20% stake in Reading. I mean, this I'm going to go with the first name, Dmitry, much easier, is a worth £7.7 billion. He's about the 156th richest man in the world. So we're not talking an Anton Zingarevich here. This is his money. He has the money and he's minted. And apparently he wants to get involved in Reading. I mean, why exactly that would be, and we have no idea. And there's been nothing more coming from France since that initial report as well, which is, I found quite strange, because in that report they seem to suggest it was very close to happening, but we've heard there's been no sort of follow-up or anything like that. From this end, Reading are saying absolutely nothing about it, just nothing on or off the record. And Brian himself, when we spoke to him on Wednesday, he said he had no idea. He said he'd read the reports, but that was as far as it got from him. Obviously, he'd love to extra investment like that if it was to happen. But yeah, it's very much up in the air on that one at the moment. It's a wall of silence from Reading and not much coming more from France. So I think it's a bit of a waiting game to see just how strong that link is.
Yeah, he's got a background in football as well. This isn't an Anton situation where he's just sort of come in almost out of the blue. He does have a bit of a background as well, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah, he certainly does. I mean, he owns Monaco, doesn't he? So he knows football. He's obviously operated at a far higher level than the Championship. So he's taken Monaco back from the second division into the top, and he spent millions. That first season, he spent about 150 million quid getting players like Falcao to the club. He's not carried on that level of investment since that. In fact, he's reduced it quite drastically. But Monaco have had a second place finish, a third place finish under him since they got promoted back. They've obviously got to Champions League, beat Arsenal last year in the round of 16, so got to the quarterfinals of Champions League. So, yeah, I mean, he knows the game. And just that level of investment, you can't really say it'd be a bad thing for Reading. There's not really any way you can look at it and think it'll be a bad thing. I mean, for the Tides as well, not really football people, aren't they? I think we all know that real estate is their game. That's what, that probably what attracted them. Well, not probably, is what attracted them to the football club in the first place, because they knew the possibilities of Royal Elm Park and things like that. So to get someone on board to help with them in terms of the football side of things, you've got to think it'd be a good idea.
You say that there's no bad side to the deal, but one of the quotes that came along with that Lekeep report was that he was looking at Reading being part of a football network. Yeah. I think he's also got some clubs, some interesting clubs in Portugal, and I think one in Belgium as well. And, you know, we've just been to the Valley on Saturday, and we've seen how that model can go badly wrong. Charlton fans very vocal in their protests against their owners, who they accuse of sort of, again, using Charlton as a feeder club, and just it's all gone horribly wrong there. Have you got any sort of worries that we could see similar happen to Reading?
I mean, I wrote something about that earlier this week, that obviously, yeah, that is the only drawback, but it's not necessarily always a bad thing. I mean, look at Watford, that it can work as well. So, and I think this guy, in terms of exactly, you know, just how much he's worth and at what level he operates, I think the Charlton example, I can't envisage something like that happening. And also with the, you know, I just think if he's coming here, if he is really wanting to get involved in it, I think he'd want a taste of the Premier League, wouldn't he? He'd want the riches of the Premier League that's on offer. You'd want something back on your investment. And so, I mean, it'd be something in the back of your mind to sort of have as a bit of a slight worry. But I just think someone of that level of wealth, who knows football, knows how it operates, I think it'd be hard to see it as a bad thing in terms of getting Reading back to where we all want them to be. They kind of need someone like that, I think, to help them get there, and certainly to sustain themselves there. So, it's always a worry with new ownership or new investment coming on board, especially when you've had your fingers burnt like Reading have before. But I'd certainly veer on the side of this one being quite a positive for the club if it was to come off.
Well, one to watch in the coming weeks and months, I'm sure. But let's switch our focus to the weekend, to tomorrow's game. It's a game against Fulham, a name that, again, as I said on the show this week, I don't think they're going to be on Steve Clarke's Christmas card list. And most of Reading fans either, because they almost, it's very harsh to say they single-handedly, but this was the big turning point at Craven Cottage for Reading season, really, that 4-2 defeat. They come to the Middlesex Stadium, they've not really improved, whereas Reading have gone backwards. How do you see this one going? What's the team situation looking like?
Team situation is looking good. I mean, they're in very good health at the moment for Reading. Matej Vidra, it seems like he's still out. Last time I spoke to McDermott, he said that Vidra was going to return to training, or due to return to training today, but that tomorrow's game would probably be too soon for him, so he'd be looking at Huddersfield. But other than that, it's just Tish Bowler is the only long-term ask for team. Reading are in decent health, so considering where we are in the league now and the demands of a long season and a cup run, the squad's looking strong. So, in terms of that, they're in good health. Fulham, strange one. It'd just been you sort of look at that game back in October and as the turning point, and also what happened with Clarke. And you've got to say Fulham have been Reading's downfall pretty much this season. Pretty much all the grief and the collapse since October, all fingers point towards Fulham for the reasons behind that.
They've got two men that, again, tormented Reading that day, Moussa Dembélé and Ross McCormack. Again, coming to the Middlesex, they're the big threats in their team. There's not a lot else in that Fulham team to worry about. Do you think this is a game that Reading will pick up all 3 points?
I think they'll win, yeah. I think Reading are going into a confident mood. I think last week, just the nature of the win last week, and it's, you know, the last minute, the way it happened, I think they'll go into it full of confidence because of that, and obviously the wins before that, and if won three in a row now. It's been a long time since Reading have done that. I think Dembélé obviously is a threat, but I think they've got to make sure they get hold of McCormack. McCormack was the man who turned that game on its head last time in October. He scored the first goal, but then he just suddenly started finding space, and Reading couldn't deal with him between that. He was drifting in between midfield and the defence, and Reading couldn't stop him. I thought he was the absolute chief architect of that win for Fulham. So I think Michael Hector's got a really important role to play in if he continues in that defensive midfield role. He's got to really watch McCormack when he drops into those pockets of space between midfield attack. He's got to stick tight to him. I think if he can do that, then he's going to nullify a big part of Fulham's weaponry. So, I think stop McCormack, Reading get the 3 points.
Yeah, and the thing with McCormack as well, people think, oh, he's just a goal scorer. As you say, he's a provider. I think he's fourth in the table for assists as well. So
yeah,
a really all-round striker that you'd absolutely love to have at your football club, but then that's why he costs 10-odd million.
Well, 10 million quid, yeah.
So we'll have to see how that one goes. And then it's Huddersfield on Tuesday, a long midweek away trip. This one has a few more question marks over it, though, because it comes just 3 days before that FA Cup quarterfinal with Crystal Palace. Steve Clarke didn't shy away from making wholesale changes. Remember that Watford game where he basically switched out the entire team just before the Bradford game. Do you think Brian's going to do similar, or do you think he'll try and keep the momentum going?
He seemed to say yesterday that he wasn't going to do similar. I mean, I think that you'd look at it and think there will have to be some changes, just given just how big that Crystal Palace game is, and a long trip to Huddersfield on Tuesday isn't going to help with that. And there's a lot of players who haven't played a lot of games. You think of Gareth McCleary, players like that haven't started games for a while. So I think he'll probably make a couple, but he certainly won't do a Watford, Steve Clarke at Watford, and change the entire team. I'd be very surprised if he does that. And he talked a lot yesterday about sort of maintaining the sort of consistency that Redknapp got. He doesn't want to go and suddenly throw a game just before the cup game. He said it's really important they keep the momentum going. So I don't think we'll see, like I said, what happened at Vicarage Road last year, but I think he has to make a couple of changes and rest a few players at that Palace game, because that Palace game is massive. It's a huge game for Redknapp. Let's face it, the league's done, dusted. They're not going up, they're not going down. They've got a real good chance to get themselves back to Wembley again, and I think they've got to make sure they go into that Palace game really strong. So I'd be very surprised if he doesn't make at least sort of two or three changes with that game in mind.
You already answered my next question. I was going to say, we dared to bring up the P word, playoffs, on Monday. Sure. No, you're not having a sneaky look through the fixture list?
No, no way. Too many teams above them. It would take too much. Just not going to happen, I'm afraid. I hope I'm wrong. I'd love nothing more to eat my words a couple of months down the line, but come on, seriously, no. Not going to happen.
I agree. But I think the nice thing is, though, is if they do beat Fulham and, say, get another 3 points against Huddersfield, then, I mean, the gaps, you say it's 8 points, maybe six. And at that point, you know, it's something to chase down anyway for the rest. Yeah. It gives the season something to go for, because it was in danger. I remember sitting there at that Wolves game thinking, I can't stand another 3-4 months of this. It just gives them a little bit of something to go for.
It does, yeah. And it would be nice, but come on. It's just not going to happen. I'd be stunned. I think the FA Cup, again, we got such a good chance to get to Wembley and making up for what happened last year. There's a bit of unfinished business in that competition. And, you know, the Palace game, I see Palace was sold out today for their away allocation. So it's going to be rocking down at the Mad Stand next Friday night. And I think that's, for me, that's where the focus should be now. I mean, what happens in the league after that, we'll have to wait and see. But for me, I just think that FA Cup game is such a big occasion again for the football club, and I think that's where the focus should be really now.
Yeah, I can't. I'm too nervous for this for the next Friday. I'm trying to put all my eggs in the league basket for the time being, because I don't want to think about how big of a game it is next Friday. So, but we'll discuss that on next week's show. Before I let you go, how was the training going for the half marathon attempt?
Yes, not bad, not bad. I did 8 miles last Sunday, which is the furthest I've done. And then this week, on Tuesday and yesterday, I just did a short of 4 miles each, but sort of ran it a lot quicker than my race pace, just to try and, apparently that helps with the longer runs. It makes it easier if you sort of do a couple of shorter ones, but much quicker in between. It helps with the endurance type thing. So yeah, got another long one, possibly planning to try and get to 10 miles on Sunday, but certainly between 8 and 10 miles. So going well, 4 weeks, coming up to 4 weeks away. So I think I'm in decent shape, but obviously I've got the upcoming birth of my child to deal with it could be at any point between that, where it's due in 2 weeks today. So it could be at any point. And I think that's going to knock the training on its head for a little bit. So I'm trying to get myself ahead in terms of that.
Good planning there. And that said, we'll put the link again in for the Just Giving. How's the donation front going? Are you nearing the target?
Yeah, well, I'm above the target now.
So wow, congratulations.
I think last time I looked, it was about sort of 1,200 quid at the moment. The target was $1,000. So I've done that really quickly. So I can't thank everyone enough for the support I've got. But obviously plenty of time to try and raise as much as possible between now and then. So if you haven't donated and you want to, then please find my Just Giving page and donate, because it's for a very, very good, worthy cause.
Absolutely. And the very final point, again, can't let you go. What has happened?
You're not going to bring that up, are you?
No, come on, what's happened?
Oh, it's the same old, isn't it? It's just Groundhog Day. I can't. I've had so many rants about this in the last 24 hours that it's just Groundhog Day. They're just spineless. They really are. They've just got absolutely no backbone about them at all. I thought the last 20 minutes at Old Trafford last Sunday, I was just disgusted with the performance. When you're 3-2 down and you're trying to go for the title, and they did not even barely muster a shot in the last 20 minutes to try and come back. There was no fight, nothing, and it was similar against Swansea in midweek. It's just spineless. Typical. So, Groundhog Day.
So Wenger in or Wenger out?
I can't ever call for him to be out. He's given me too much joy, and you know, I've sat there and watched my team go and beat him for the league, and you know, that will never happen again. And so I can never call for him, but I've said it many times, we're never going to win the league with him in charge. And so, you know, it's time for change. It has been time for change for a long time, but I can never sit there and boo him or demand that he's out. You just got to wait for it to happen, unfortunately. And it is very much time for a change. But I could never boo the man. He's got far too much respect for him to do that.
That is a very diplomatic answer. Well done. You can tell you work in the media. Thanks very much, Charles. Are you web chatting this afternoon?
Yes, 1 o'clock.
Perfect. Tune in there, and you can follow Charles on Twitter at Charles_Watts. Lots of stuff up on the Tilehurst End as well. We've obviously had the main edition of the show coming up on Monday. We've had lots of great opinion pieces, news and analysis go up in midweek as well. So head over to tilehurstend.com for that. Also, just a quick one. I will be releasing the first part of a 2-part interview with former BBC Radio Berkshire head of sport, Joel Hufford. That'll be going up on Sunday, the first part, and then the next part will go up on Wednesday, just before the Cup quarter final. He was in charge of Reading Berkshire Sport when Alan Pardew was in charge of Reading, and some really interesting stories about some run-ins he had with Pards, and a great little story involving Nicky Forster and Jimmy McIntyre, and something that was probably glad it wasn't caught on camera. So with that tease alone, I'll leave you to listen to that on Sunday. In the meantime, Charles, thanks very much for joining me, and we'll hopefully chat on Friday just before that massive game with Palace.
Indeed. Have a good weekend, Dan.
In fact, I can't let you go because you haven't given me your prediction for the prediction league.
Oh, no, I haven't.
You haven't?
Did anyone predict 4-3 last weekend?
No. The closest we got was a handbags 3-0.
Right.
So, but you did pick up a point with that win. Your lead at the top is now 8 points. Over me and Johnny, who are sat on 18, Westie's on 16, and Handbags props up the league on 10. So far, I've gone for a 1-0 home win. Westie has gone for a 2-1 home win.
I am going to go for a 2-0 home win.
2-0. And do you want to give Huddersfield now, or do you want to wait until after the weekend?
I am going to say Reading are going to lose 2-1 at Huddersfield. A weakened Reading team are going to lose 2-1.
Fair enough. Well, thank you very much for that. We'll see how it comes. Hopefully one of us can eat into your lead, because we need to make that race exciting for the final few weeks. Right, as I said, have a fantastic weekend, Charles, and I'll speak to you next week.
All right, Dan. Thank you, mate.
Cheers. Take care. Ta-da.
Bye-bye.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at the Tilehurst End
and facebook.com/the Tilehurst End.